welcome to Grim Scenarios. I am your host, Milk, and with me, as always, is your other host, Emma. And with us today are our two very, very good friends. We are here with Moose and Cat. No, Goose and Cat. Not Moose and Squirrel. Goose and Cat.
Why are you doing a bad Russian accent?
Look,
what is wrong with you?
I'm old, so I got like a Bullwinkle and Rocky reference here. Nobody else is Goose and Cat.
I feel like a lot of the audience is not going to understand that. But if it makes you feel better, Milk, I do.
Thank you.
I understood that reference.
Thank you both for making me feel slightly less old. Welcome, Mullabok and Navian, our good friends. Who are here today, as you can tell from the image that you're seeing on your screen, unless you're on the audio version, hello to our three or four audio listeners. Who are here today to I guess, review our tier list, to have a conversation with us about the tier list that Emma and I put all those videos of work into, and to tell us how wrong we are.
Because it's important to have feedback, disagreement. Here are other views.
Yeah.
That's a life lesson.
It's also important to give geese guns.
Yes. This podcast, of course, endorses giving geese guns at all times, and everyone who appears on this podcast agrees with that policy.
I agree with that policy.
Yes.
That sounds like a statement of some veracity of true or false.
Well, if you haven't gone through our extended series of tier list videos, this video is not going to make a ton of sense to you. So you may want to start elsewhere if you haven't checked in on those. We're not going to be reading off the character descriptions or kind of talking about the basics of what characters do in this video. This video is primarily going to be Navian and Mullabok challenging the tier list that Emma and I put blood, sweat, and tears and a modicum of thought into.
Just to remind you all, this tier list is basically an attempt to create a strategic depth tier list, essentially, of Blood of the Clock Tower characters. You know, some characters have more unique play patterns, or more limited play patterns, more limited choices they can do to further the goals. Some characters have a lot of different options you can do, and we wanted to think about, like, sort of character depth, character strategy. This isn't a ranking of how fun characters are. This isn't a ranking of how powerful characters are. This isn't a ranking of how good characters are. There's some characters I really like the flavor and power level of that are down in D tier, and there's some characters that I'm not a huge fan of that are up in S tier. Because we weren't trying to just say, what are the best characters to the worst characters? Because that didn't seem super interesting to us.
Yeah, plus we don't really consider ourselves an authority on what the best and worst things are. Like, a lot of that's going to be personal preference. That's going to be your experiences playing those characters, right? So,
everyone knows the Saint's a useless character and the Clockmaker's a terrible character. Like, these are just objective facts.
I mean,
yeah, we don't need to talk about that.
Yeah. I do see a mistake on the tier list already, Emma, because we didn't consider the Clockmaker Jinx with Clockmaker. So that's going to be something we will need to correct in the future. Well, Mullabok and Navian have some things they'd like to challenge us on. So, Mullabok, why don't you take it away here?
Yep, we wrote up some notes about thoughts we had about a few things. In the S tier, one of the characters in the S tier that we flagged was the Huntsman. And it's not because we disagree with anything that was said on the Huntsman review about it being important to cover for damsels and making sure town doesn't out the damsel by just giving all their information and making it obvious who has, is the odd person out and what they have to do to find the damsel. I think that is all very good and interesting. The thing that makes me think that perhaps it does not belong in S tier is that when you look at other S tier characters, you have things like the gossip and the artist, where it's like the world is their oyster. They have so many options to play any game however they want. And I think that the Huntsman, the thing I just described, you're supposed to do that every single time you draw the Huntsman token. So that there is an important strategy for you to think about in the game that you're playing, but you're probably going to do that strategy the next time you pull Huntsman too, and you're probably going to also do it the time after that. And so that to me says that perhaps it is not in the echelons of S, the very most strategic characters.
Sorry, Milk.
No,
go ahead.
no. It's interesting because, my thought about that, and I don't know where Emma was with this one, but my thought about that was that it was more diverse because while you're doing the same thing, each script that you do it on is going to require you to do it in a somewhat different way, and you're going to have to be, sort of adaptable, like getting into double claims. Like you're almost sort of the Huntsman strategy we talked about was really looking to get into double claims or looking to sort of be a good player creating false information that sort of looks just a little too false. So it's, it's interesting, and maybe it's hard to parse between S and A, or maybe, those top two tiers. Emma, what do you think?
I think those are fair points, Milovok. Let me think. Part of why it's probably an S tier is I wanted to push back on narratives that Huntsman is a dull character. Not necessarily that it's people don't have to like Huntsman or that people have to think Huntsman is powerful, which it's not particularly powerful. It's probably one of the weaker townsfolk out there. But there's lots of loud voices, including some very prominent Clock Tower voices, who think the Huntsman's a pretty dull character that doesn't have a lot to do and makes games less interesting. And I think part of why this ended up in S tier was I was probably trying to push back on those narratives a little bit. I don't think the Huntsman necessarily is always having to do damsel coverage in the same way. I think, there's various different ways a Huntsman can approach the idea of how do I best cover for a damsel, whether that is, a thing I've seen a few players try is, of course, the snap damsel guess is the Huntsman, which serves the purpose of, one, letting the good team know that there's a damsel out there, two, making you someone who, if you're a minion, the damsel guess is spent, versus, like, but it is at the cost of some social credibility because you're claiming minion and guessing a damsel. Versus other people who try to be super socially good as a huntsman, versus people who specifically bluff damsel. Though I guess this all does fall in the umbrella of, as the huntsman, you have the job of being the damsel coverer in chief. So maybe that is a sufficient limit to put it sort of down a notch. I could agree with that.
I don't fully agree with Milk that the way the huntsman is going to try to look like a damsel is going to vary all that much between scripts. I actually think that there's probably not that much variability in how they go about doing that. Like, yes, it is going to be a little bit script dependent, but yeah, I don't think it's a massive difference.
I think it's perfectly fair. So where would you all write it? Where would you move it down to? Is it
Well,
mid
I think
tier?
it is absolutely unquestionably at least an A. I just might move it from S to A. I think it might even be like high A, but for me, the fact that you're probably going to do the same thing when you pull Gossip Artist, some of these other S tiers, you're not going to do the same thing, and it's going to depend a lot more on the game state. Might just like it knocks just that little bit below those characters for me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a reasonable critique of the Huntsman being here. I guess would you replace it in S tier with something, or would you just knock it down and leave it there alone and leave S tier shorter a character?
That is a good question. I'm not sure if we saw anything in A that we were like on the townsfolk level that we thought
I
would
can answer it.
definitely
I can
go
answer
up to
that as
S.
no. We did not see anything in A tier that we thought needed to be moved up.
So I guess if there was going to be a bubble character that gets to S, it would be fine if it was Huntsman. I just think Like, if your objective is to have a certain number of townsfolk in S, that's fine. I just think maybe its natural home is more A.
Look, in homage to other tier ranking podcasts past, I did want to end up with a S tier script that was completely dysfunctional but did have the correct number of characters.
Well, it is convenient for that goal that Damsel is also an S. I will give you that.
It made some sense at the time.
So,
Okay.
Perhaps Huntsman belongs at A tier. Perhaps that's where it goes. But on the other hand, this is 4-4-4-13.
Okay. Well, we can move on if you like, and I think the answer to that question could be that yes, there would be potential replacements for some other characters.
Okay.
Well,
Okay.
hit us with another one, Molly.
So another character I want to—I have actually have a very specific question for you about this one, and that is about the Vortox. And the Vortox is a really cool demon for storytelling, script building, things like that. And I think it can really elevate a script and the information ambiguity on a script by existing. My question to you is, does the fact that a Vortox being on script elevate the evil team's bluffing information and navigating infoscape strategy, regardless of whether or not it is in play? Does that factor into its ranking, or is the ranking more about you've pulled the token, how strategic is it going to be now that you've pulled the token? Because I think if it's the latter, I would knock it down, and if it's the former, I would say it's definitely yes.
Yeah, I think that's a really. I think, like, for evil characters, that's, like, a really ambiguous question we probably didn't talk about enough when we were making this. Because, it's naturally something part of what evil characters do is bluff other evil characters are in play, right? For the most part. Some evil characters are, by their nature, of course, extremely loud. But I would say most evil characters want their presence or absence in the game to be ambiguous, right? Because once an evil character is locked to being in the game, it closes worlds where other evil characters are out, and when evil characters function differently, that collapses worlds in on the evil team. Like, right? Like, if you prove a poisoner is in play in 8-player Trouble Brewing, it means that the three face-up outsider claims contains two of the three evils. So as a poisoner, so as part of what, so are. For all evil characters, I think you're keeping in mind, like, the totality of their script context. I think, like, for the Vortox, at least in my mind, the Vortox's demon power, that all information is false, is just so much broader in a way than almost any other evil characters I can think of off the top of my head, in the sense that the Vortox is affecting every townsfolk character on most Vortox scripts. There's some Vortox scripts where there's some townsfolk that don't have a direct interaction with the Vortox, but, like, on SNV, it's 12 out of the 13 characters directly interact, 12 out of the 13 townsfolk directly interact with the Vortox. 11 if your philosophers are, jokesters who only ever go mutant or snake charmer. And in that sense, like, the Vortox knowing that Vortoxed information is going to be present forces the Vortox to make choices in ways that aren't true for other demons with narrower information, with narrower powers, right? Like, the Nodashi doesn't need to worry that much about whether people are going to read this as a Nodashi game or a Vigor Mortis game or a Fangu game, because reading it as any one of those four, as one of any one of those three teamins doesn't, wreck a Nodashi's bluff strategy. It doesn't wreck a Nodashi's kill strategy, buff strategy in particular. Whereas a Vortox has to decide whether they think they can support or push back against a Vortox narrative. And it has to play in one of those two ways, right? And it always has to do that in a way that an Odashi, for example, an SMV, an Odashi or a Vega or a Fengu doesn't have to do. They can care less about whether the good team correctly identifies the demon type, because it's not going to directly interfere with their bluffing strategy. If their bluff information is, if you're a Fengu whose bluff information is wrong, you can be sat next to a Nodashi. You can be sat next to a Vigor killed minion. If you're a Vortox whose bluffed information is wrong for the world town is in, you're the demon, right? Or at least a minion. And I think that's the sense where I think, in terms of bluffing strategy, all evil players have to think about Vortox bluffing strategy when Vortox is on the script. But only the Vortox needs to think about it in the sense of, if I get this wrong, if I get my bluffing strategy wrong for the game state, I'm fucked.
Mm-hmm. I think for being in play, I'm probably thinking about, for example, Nodashi as having a significantly higher bar for kill strategy than a Vortox does. One of the reasons I think that is because I don't know how many Nodashi games I've seen where the Nodashi's neighbors are just alive all game because the demon knows that they cannot contribute useful information that will actually solve the game any healthy way. But then you get to the end of the game and there's three people in a row left alive and it's like, well, this is a Nodashi game because of this this like line of people who all have wrong info. And I think for like a Vigor Mortis, let's say you're a Vigor Mortis who plans to kill a minion on night two. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about this Oracle 1? Let's say you're a Vortox who just does a normal thing and kills a good player night two. What are you going to do about this Oracle 1? I think those are kind of similar questions where a Vortox could suggest, oh, is this a Vortox game? Because an Oracle 1 on night two is super weird, whereas a Vortox could say, oh, was that person a Vigor killed minion? Is there a mathematician who upped their number tonight? The way I think about it is like pretty in parallel. And maybe it's true that there's more danger for a Vortox if they get it wrong. But I think those dangers are definitely present for most specifically Nodashi and Vigor. I definitely agree that Fengu is in the right place, but I don't know. Navian, do you have any thoughts about that?
I think I largely disagree with Emma about the gap between the other demons and, you know, again, specifically Nodashi and Vigor, I think, versus the Vortox in terms of those kinds of things. Yeah, like, there is some gap between them, sure, but I don't think the gap is as wide as is being purported.
That's fair.
I would argue, though, I actually do think Vortox belongs in S tier strategically, and I think there's a really good reason that doesn't necessarily impact the four of us, or that the four of us don't necessarily recognize because of our experience playing the game, which is that the Vortox needs to be able to feel out the game to a point of knowing whether they need to sell Vortox or not. And to do that, and to create information that makes sense, and to know which game you're selling, it requires a substantial amount of game knowledge. That is to say, you need to understand how the characters from S&V work. I'm just talking about on S&V. I'm not talking about off the base script, because I mean we could just talk forever. But you know, Molly was pointing out, oh, okay, so you can ask like, is there a math one, or like you can almost easily lob an easy ball over to a minion. It could be like, oh, there's a math one. It's not a Vortox game. It's a Nodashi or whatever. You know, like, so I think like for the demon to create coherent worlds in a Vortox game, a lot of times you need to do a lot of different things. You're juggling a lot of different ideas, and a lot of different pieces of information to try to figure out, do I sell a Vortox world? Do I sell a non-Vortox world? Is it coherent? You know, is it coherent, the things I say? Can I, you know, all the things you normally have to do as a demon are, like, turned up a bit because you really have an ear out for specific types of information, right? Like, town crier information, you can kind of let it do its thing, but oracles in a Vortox game, like, that information gets out, and now you've got to sell someone who's good, who was executed or who died in the night as evil. Like, you, there's, I think one of the reasons we thought Vortox was so high strategically is because of the effort it takes to really create those believable worlds as a Vortox and know what side of the coin you need to sell, whether you try to sell the non-Vortox world, whether you try to sell the Vortox world. Much of that is dependent on what the storyteller put in the bag as well.
I'm not gonna lie, I think straight up none of that is applicable to only the Vortox and not any of the other demons. I think that all of those things apply to all the demons on any script where Vortox is present. Like, that is just a factor of Vortox existing on the script and is not necessarily unique to the Vortox themselves.
Let me ask you all a question that I was thinking of while listening to all you speak. As a Vortox, would you ever murder your minion, Knight 2, to secure the Oracle Zero?
Yes, but I would also, as any other demon, murder a minion to secure an Oracle 1, even if I'm not a Vigor.
Do I have a witch? If so, yes. Maybe a Cerenovus. Maybe a Cerenovus too. Maybe a Cerenovus.
Like, I just, like... I guess, maybe. Like, if I really need to frame the day one execute, I might do it as a Nodashi or a Fangu. I might kill off my minion to hard frame the execute, but...
I think demons don't do that enough in S&V. Like, kill your minion on night two and give oracles weird numbers and see what happens.
Oh, absolutely agree. Demons don't kill their minions enough generally. All minion demons so don't true. Kill their minions more. Like,
that's the official opinion of this podcast, by the way.
This is also why people think never take Dreamer unless it's Vortox, is because they won't, like, have the minion Dreamer confirm an evil player and then just kill them immediately. Yeah. Make something weird happen.
But, okay. So, like, I guess, I think as a Vortox, I think the choice to kill your minion immediately is even more interesting than for the other demons. But if you don't, that's, I think, fine, too.
Yeah, I don't think it's more interesting so much as just interesting in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I think what Emma said is a fair point. Like, it is a way that Vortox edges, gains some edge in kill strategy, I would say. I don't know if it I don't think it gains more kill strategy than an Odashi inherently has, for example.
Like, the things Vortox need to do to fake non-Vortox worlds are... just, like, much more insane in my mind than what Nodashis have to do to fake non-Nodashi worlds, or what Vigs have to do to fake Vig worlds, like, or non-Vig worlds. Like, Molbark brought up the Oracle 1 problem for the Vig, but, like, at the very least, the Vig can then say, okay, the Fangu jumped, right? Like, they always have that optionality immediately. Like, it's a synergistic interaction on the script to allow Vig and Fangu to bluff as each other.
Yeah, and they can even point at it being a Vortox game, which is helpful for a Vig, because, you know, there's not going to be that much misinformation potentially, right? You get that Oracle 1 on that first night. Of course, the saddest thing is when there's no Oracle 1 and you tried to kill your own minion strategy to get an Oracle 1, but that's beside the point.
The saddest thing is when there's two good players who are dead after day 1 and night 2. And then on day 2, your minion gets executed, and now the storyteller is forced to pick between an Oracle 2 and an Oracle 0 as the false information. Like, that is the
saddest. That I agree with, for sure.
That is the saddest result for a Vortox, right? Like, that is a result of Vortox really wants to avoid at all costs. In a way that I, like, for me at least, as the other demons, I don't, like, there aren't these particular information patterns that can show up that terrify me in that way. Like, there's bad ones. Like, the Oracle 1, Math 1 is bad for the Vig. The Nodashi Day 2 Math 2, Night 1 Math 2 is terrible for the Nodashi. But, like, they're not, they're, like, these are terrible for these demons, but they're not, like, world-closing in the way that, shit, the Oracle's gonna get a 2 or a 0 on Night 2, or on Night 3 of a 9-player game. That's a problem.
The outcome of the town believing it's likely to be Nodashi is substantially worse than the outcome of town believing it's... Like, it's substantially... The outcome of town believing it's likely to be a Nodashi game is substantially less bad for the Nodashi than town believing it's a Vortox game is for the Vortox, right? It's way worse for the Vortox to fail the bluff and then end up with the wrong information in the world where it's definitely Vortox. And I think that's where we were coming from, is that the danger for the Vortox of getting the world wrong is game ending. Whereas the danger for the Nodashi, for example, is, you know, maybe a story, you know, maybe the storyteller, you know, gives false information that then gets tracked back to that player. And even then you still have, you know, outsiders and minions and things that could spread it out. So like it's a little bit safer. Like Vortox really needs to be on the ball creating that world.
Mullabok and I recently played the most cursed game. Oh, you were also there.
I was also there.
I forgot. It was Sex Violence Ever, which was a Nodashi who was just absolutely cursed.
But I mean, that was
a Nodashi with a mathematician at play, and the philosopher used their ability on recurring role on night one. The Nodashi is guaranteed to be found by like day two or three, no matter what your player count is.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a perfect storm. Like the average math one in a Nodashi game isn't gonna sell out the Nodashi immediately, I think.
It really depends on how many... this is, I guess, more of a storytelling point, but if you're gonna have Nodashi and Mathematician in a bag together, please load up as many of the Night 1 math triggers as possible, because you need as many different seats that Nodashi could be in.
The number of games where I have seen the Nodashi executed by day three at the latest because of a night one math one is very high.
Yes. But I don't know. I could see Vortox not actually being that much more in depth than Vig and Nodashi.
I still simply disagree with Milk about the difference in danger levels of a Vortox getting it wrong versus any of the other demons getting it wrong. Like, yes, there is a difference. I'm not going to say that there isn't, but I don't think the difference is as substantial as you two seem to.
You think it's a difference of type versus a difference of quantity, essentially?
There's a small difference in quantity, but it's just, I just don't think the quantity difference is as big as you think it is.
That's fair.
I think that all evil teams want to hold Vortox or Not Worlds in tension for at least the first few days of a game, and then figure out who to frame during that time based on where they think it's going to end up.
That's fair. I don't remember. I vaguely remember we toyed with a fifth demon in S tier at some point and then went down to these four. It was probably Poe that would have been the other contender. If we were to move...
Don't worry,
Vortox,
we'll get to that one later.
Oh, well.
Okay.
We do... If we were going to move one up, it would probably be Poe, yes.
Okay.
Spoilers!
So you would move Vortox down to A tier.
Well, yeah, when we get to the Poe discussion, we'll decide whether we'll make the swap.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm just keeping up with it on the video so that folks know what we've kind of said.
And our final thing that we want to note in S tier was, unfortunately, one of my, Navian, and Emma's favorite characters, the butler. We do love it. As when we listened to your points about it, we thought that perhaps the teaching aspect on Trouble Brewing of teaching new players to think about who's voting on what, and the butler, you could more viscerally tell who will not let you vote on certain nominations or not. That is important, but we thought maybe it was overvalued in how to place it strategically, and as people gain experience, they are, you know, watching voting patterns regardless of their role, and then at that point the butler is more like pick someone who you think is good and you think will either share your worldviews or at least put their hand up when you want to put your hand up. And then at that point, it's not that deep. And so perhaps it would get knocked out of S because of the fact that that after the initial learning curve for players, that it's more, it's got a more like stable play pattern that isn't that deep strategically.
Yeah, I think this was probably in part at least one where, you know, we wanted to push back again on people who, you know, are like, oh, the butler's terrible. I mean, it's the only outsider on Trouble Brewing that gets to pick things, right? Like it and the teaching and learning aspect is definitely there for us.
So I guess like I'm gonna start off by saying I think I'm gonna concede this point eventually, but I actually think, especially in the early game of a large Trouble Brewing, so like two or three minions, I think you want to pick someone you think is a minion as the butler, not a person you think is good. Or at least someone you suspect might be a minion. I don't think you want to hit the demon, and I don't think you want to hit other good players. I think you want to hit minions specifically. Because you want to know who evil players won't let you vote on. And I think that's where, in my mind, a lot of the depth of Butler comes in, is on those early executions, who are the minions protecting? Is, I think, especially if they know you're the Butler and know that it'll look bad if you don't let them vote. I think there's a lot of depth there. I don't know. That's just my main thought, is I think like it's not as simple, straightforward as you want to pick good players who will let you vote on the worlds you want to vote on. It's like in the early game when any individual votes don't specifically matter as much, you want to gain information from who people won't let you vote on. So you want to pick the people who have someone to protect, right?
It's an interesting point.
Pick into pairs, I think, is always an interesting thing to do when you're the butler, right? Pick into a pair of players who seem to be confirming each other or working together. I always find that interesting. Because they're certainly not going to let you vote on each other, but there might be someone else that they're, you know, allied with somewhere.
Now, I mean, I think like just looking at what's in A tier, like I will concede there are outsiders who have more difficult strategic choices than the butler. So I don't
I
want to press
mean,
the point too hard.
like if you want to make a script, then I just throw a heretic up there with goblin and damsel and huntsman where it belongs. But that's maybe a side
And
point.
I think there was a point in the tier list making where we were like considering the fun of characters probably too much. And we mentioned that in our like final wrap up as well.
Yeah, there is certainly a point where we're like, does the like ability of this character to make games unfun for everyone, for large quantities of players, make these characters less strategically interesting because you're forced to limit your choices by the limit the choices the design space of the character encourages by the fact that fully exploring those design places are going to make other people sad. Whereas the butler doesn't have that problem.
But would I swap Butler and Heretic on this tier list? Probably, you know.
Yeah. I think like the butler always is finding new ways to surprise me of ways it can be interesting. There was a text Trouble Brewing I was co-storytelling a few weeks ago where the poisoner was bluffing librarian confirming the butler, and there was some super interesting like things that like the librarian was doing for their butler who was naturally picking them that like I think like if players had been thinking about the butler more strategically in that game, like they would have picked up on we need to kill this goddamn librarian, so the butler picks someone else.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I think yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, I think one of the characters I'm always most interested to pull in TB is the butler, just because I'm always interested in seeing what happens as I'm playing it. The the lack of information, like the lack of having your own information and outsiders is always like an appealing thing, you know. But I think with Butler, like it definitely hones me in on things that, like trying to do things that I wouldn't normally do. And I'm certainly never, you know, I'm not the person who's always just going to pick the outed virgin, you know, to make sure that I get to vote with that person, because I mean I don't trust outed virgins usually. Not that I don't trust that they're good, I just don't, you know, I trust myself, my own social reads and solving over, you know, someone else's. Okay, well, you all would move it down to A tier, I assume, then.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just drop it down there for our audience, and we'd probably keep rolling.
What's next?
Well, that does us for S tier. So maybe you want to take A tier.
Yeah. So I'm gonna start with the librarian, washerwoman, grandmother trio, and kind of talk about all of them at the same time. I will start by saying that I think the grandmother can stay and should be above washerwoman and librarian. Whether that's like a higher A tier level or whether librarian and washerwoman deserve to go down a tier is more what's up for like discussion for me. And so grandmother, I think, stays because they have to account for the fact that they might be an extra death. And that can have a lot of strategy involved about when you might want to get yourself executed or when you might want to get yourself protected and those kinds of things. So that is why I think grandmother has more to it than washerwoman or librarian. The points that you were talking about with librarian and washerwoman about, like, you know, you should sacrifice yourself over the player that you're confirming in order to like kind of assuage some of the fears about like spy or whatever on the script. I actually think that is almost always true, that you should sacrifice yourself over your confirmation, regardless of whether spy is on the script or in play or any of that, because your ability is done. You already have your information. The player that you're confirming, their ability is probably not done, or they have more solving starting info than yours will be. So this is true for both washerwoman and librarian generally, more so for washerwoman with regards to like their ability is still doing something else, right? But you also talked about like, oh yeah, they're you know, pretty high on the list for like things that want to nominate a virgin. And I also kind of disagree with this. I think they're second line for virgin confirmation. The roles that I would consider as first line confirmation would be the other two you start knowings of chef or investigator when you're talking about TB, or even things like an empath with a zero or a two. I would rather, as a washerwoman, have those or a librarian, have those people be confirming themselves. And if I can't find any of those, then yeah, okay, I'll consider nominating that virgin and furthering the confirmation chain. But I don't think there's like a ton more to it. Like, okay, you can get into a role swap to help protect your washerwoman confirm, and I've seen that work and that's great, but like that's mostly your strategy is I'm here to protect this other person. And I don't think it has as much depth to it as needing to consider things like, where and when do I want to die? Do I want to confirm another player by protecting myself at the potential risk of making it look like I'm evil, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I'm happy to cede the point on Washerwoman the Librarian, in part because TB was the first script that we kind of reviewed characters on. And so when we came around to some of these townsfolk, you know, we didn't have the whole list built out of all of the different townsfolk to sort of do comparatives. And so some of the TB characters, you know, are the ones we've kind of thought maybe were in the wrong places. I think that the interesting strategic thing with librarian, I might quibble with you more because I do think librarian has a ton of like interesting value on TB. I think the thing with washerwoman is trying the strategy and the interesting thing with washerwoman is trying to keep your confirmation alive, typically without outing their role or without outing that they're confirmed. Like, how do you keep your confirmation alive without effectively making them a target, right? And that's why you see the role swaps and the things like that. So, like, for Washerwoman, I certainly see the point, and I think Washerwoman could, you know, in the overall tier list, drop down to the B tier, and that would probably be fine. Librarian has a huge job in TB of doing one of the main solving components, which is figuring out if it's a Baron game, figuring out the outsider count, and that, you know, the structure of that play pattern, I think, to me, is almost more strategic than Washerwoman. Again, I would see not as strategic as Grandmother. Grandmother, I think, of the three, Grandmother has the most interesting combination of things that it has to do.
I will concede that maybe you're right about Librarian having a bit more than Washerwoman, but also, and to add to that, I will bring up that if you're talking about Librarian once you get off of TB, there are actually some outsiders that is going to drastically change how a Librarian might play strategically with regards to their confirmation. And I think Washerwoman doesn't gain as much depth when it goes off of TB as Librarian might. So I'll concede that point on Librarian, for sure.
I think, like, I agree with the things you said, Navy, and I do think it's a little different for Librarian and Washerwoman, even on TB, for the reasons you say, because, like, the Librarian, it's, like, it's drunk, right? It's the drunk problem, which becomes even more bizarre for the Librarian once you start seeing things like damsels and mutants and politicians who either can't confirm to you or are going to lie to you or whatnot. Or the ones that, or like outsiders you actually do want to kill, as the Librarian, even if you're confirming them, like goons maybe, or, but even on TV, like, you see it, like, Librarian who sees a drunk is, I think, overdone by storytellers, and I think librarians don't get to be happy little confirmers enough, but one of the reasons Librarian who sees the drunk is overdone is because it creates a more engaging, interesting puzzle for the librarian, right? Because you're not really confirming anyone. This is super easy to bluff. You're not really in a confirmation pair. You're now trying to solve essentially a three-way drunk ping between you and the two people. So I guess, like, looking at this again, I could see the argument for knocking Washerwoman down much stronger than I could see the argument for knocking Librarian down, just because Librarian has a higher risk of failing to confirm.
Yeah, that's a really interesting, this, like, that was a really interesting one that, I'm going to be thinking about for a while, I think.
I think that makes sense. I think my ranking would definitely go Washerwoman bottom. Probably Librarian middle, Grandmother the most because of the trying not to get double killed part.
Well, I mean, we all agree Stuart is the bottom of these four characters, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't have Stuart at
this. Does this mean we have to drop Stuart down to C tier? Is that what's happening here?
There's really five characters of these types that exist, right? There's Pixie, Librarian, Washerwoman, Grandmother, Stuart. I think, like, Pixie and Grandmother being ahead of Librarian, being ahead of Washerwoman, being ahead of Steward is correct.
I agree with that entirely.
And maybe we should have made that differentiation of these five, like, day one confirmers more clear.
I mean, I could just put Grandmother or Pixie in S tier, the other one in A tier, put Librarian in B tier.
Well, there's too many townsfolk in S tier, Milk. Too many townsfolk in S tier. It's a whole problem for having the script of the 13444 script that doesn't work.
Let's keep moving.
Molly, you're okay.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about our good friend the Poe now. And this is a case where I agree with everything that was said on the podcast. I think that something that was not raised that I think could raise the Poe up when it is considered is the Poe on BMR has the ability to bluff other demon types better than any other demon. And that is often an incredibly effective strategy. Whenever I've seen a Poe in a game where town is in Zabul world and they just, like, think it's Zabul, we need to start double tapping, the Poe universally wins that game in my experience, and sometimes they're forced into it because their Pocharge got minstrel drunk or inkept or something like that. But when the Poe is like, "Well, my charge didn't work, it's time to bluff Zabul," I guess they just win way more than any other case. And it's also not too hard to bluff Pukka, try to time your kills right on somebody who you think, oh, it'd be nice if they questioned their information. And then when you charge, it could look like the Pukka, hit an executed player or whatever. And then again, you just wipe people out while they're in the wrong demon type world. So I think when you consider that, then it might elevate it up to an S.
Yeah,
I would like to add that we are not necessarily endorsing that Poe's try to look like Zambul's on purpose, but it is a thing that has worked very effectively.
That was a pretty impassioned plea. I'm ready to concede
Yeah,
the point that Poe is more functionally
I'm
swapped.
happy to concede the point and move Poe up to S tier. I think people
I
start.
too have.
Go ahead, Emma.
Yeah, sorry, Milk. Oh no, I too have never seen a Poe who, whether by choice or by circumstances, starts bluffing Zabul, fail to win the game, which is again not an endorsement because of all the problems that exist with Zabul games sometimes, but it probably will increase your win rates if you bluff Zabul more as a Poe.
What I would encourage, I'm not endorsing Poe's bluffing Zambul more, but what I would encourage is Poe's recognizing when that world is possible and available to them, and at least considering whether it's going to help get them into the mid to late game, whether it's going to help them get to that point where they can just wipe the town out.
Because, yeah, when town's executing dead bodies repeatedly to deal with Zambuls and masterminds, and they're out of Poe worlds completely, that is the time when your charge into a triple kill is most devastating,
Yeah.
because you're probably just won the game there.
And I think it's pretty obvious for Poes to sometimes like fake Pukka worlds because they do have the one kill, the single kill option. So like if you start at that thought and then you think about, okay, Poes could also bluff, potentially bluff Shabaloth if there's enough protection or you sink a kill or whatever. It's pretty easy to solve whether it's a Poe or Shabaloth most of the time because of the regurgitation, but you never know. I do think that's fair, and I'm happy to put it in S tier.
Yeah, I'm happy to concede on the Poe.
I
People
think we were
objected to this
certainly
at the
torn.
time. I think people objected to us putting Vortox ahead of Poe at the time. They were probably right. I've been on a Vortox kick recently. Perhaps I was too high on the Vortox's own supply.
You're certainly vociferous.
I do think that sometimes when you're making these kinds of tier lists, it can be a little bit difficult to separate your enthusiasm and joy for a particular character and what it does by like existing on a script to the entire dynamic of the game. It's hard to separate that from the strategy of the player who pulled the token sometimes.
Yeah, and in the end, it's just a bit of fun, isn't it?
True.
All right, what's next? The Poe has vanquished the Vortox.
All right. Next up is Mathematician. I think that there's a chance that this was rated a little bit higher because people struggle to understand it. And that makes it like kind of artificially feel like there's more strategy involved to it than there actually is. And I'm going to compare it to Juggler to sort of illustrate my point. So Juggler has a two-step process, right? Its first step, strategy-wise, is to get claims from people. And preferably get true claims from people so that you can actually make a juggle that might be useful and get you good information. And then the second step in Juggler is their public claim strategy, which kind of holds a lot of Juggler's strategy, is, who to juggle and how to do this in a way that makes it, useful for you without being obvious that you're just a juggler, so you die, whatever. Mathematician kind of has just step one. Mathematician's job is to get true claims from people, to get your grim sorted out, and that will help you figure out what your numbers mean, right? It will help you decide if the philosopher is to be believed. It'll help you decide what demon type is in play. But it kind of just like strategy-wise, it stops there. Yes, there are many different ways to try to get those true claims from people, and you do. It is a very social character, and because it's meta information, you have to work with other people in the game in order to get those numbers figured out. But I think that like it should be below Juggler because it just sort of has step one and then stops.
Yeah, I think I talk about mathematician a lot of times alongside of things like general, because I think they get the same sort of, they have the same sort of play pattern in a way, right? You get information from other people and you try to figure out what aligns with your knowledge, what aligns with your meta information, and what doesn't align with your meta information. Whether, you know, again, mathematician's probably higher because we were thinking about the challenge of kind of knowing what that math information means, especially on SNV, where obviously you could just have a chart that tells you like what things are possible when you have different math numbers. I think when you get off of SNV, mathematician can be trickier when you play in games with, you know, a little bit more vicious storytellers who are going to give true information to players who could get false information and sort of mix up the trues and falses. I think it makes the mathematician information itself harder to parse. You know, whether mathematician is more or less strategic than general, it's I certainly would concede that it's probably that juggler has a trickier job and a more strategic choice to make, and in part just because juggler only gets their information once, so they have to get all this on the first day when everybody's probably not excited to share their role on a script where all the roles are very powerful, right? So like I think I can respect your point about the two-step process and mathematician only necessarily having one step in it, or maybe more importantly, not having to solve it until day three or four.
Yeah, and I think like when you do talk about like mathematician coming off of S&D and starting to get into customs where its own information starts to get more complicated, like there's not a lot of actual strategy involved in sorting out what your numbers mean, right? That is actually a much more logical and like deductive kind of aspect of the game. The strategy is just in getting your grim filled out accurately.
Yeah.
So like the fact that it can come off of S&D and continue getting more complicated doesn't actually like impact its strategic value at all.
That's probably fair. That's probably fair.
Go ahead.
I guess part of this is yeah. Yeah, I think this is all fair. I could see the mathematician needing to go down a notch.
We'll just put it over there by its
It
buddy,
probably
the general.
belongs with these other just superpowered information rules like Fortune Teller and Chambermaid that are just
Oh,
doing
don't
their
worry.
thing.
We'll get to those.
Like, math information is so powerful, like, it probably was easy for us to overstate its the strategic depth of playing the character. I guess it's more like it's possible we swapped how the active, powerful information roles of Empath and Chambermaid should have been ranked with the passive ones of Empath and Fort of Mathematician. It is possible we made that mistake.
Let's keep it rolling.
All right. Well, we have come to a section where it's going to be let's have a big old chat section because I wanted to talk about the empath and the fortune teller in conjunction with each other. And I want to kick that off by saying if you look at the trouble brewing rules that at least were at S tier before today, we have poisoner, butler, imp, raven keeper, monk. Those all have something in common that is perhaps telling, and they all say pick a player on them. And then we have our friend the fortune teller that says pick two players on it. And then we have our friend the empath who says don't pick anyone, just have the storyteller tell you each night how many of your living neighbors are evil. I think the empath has a fairly linear play pattern where if you have a zero I think all of us here would usually agree that you usually don't try to kill your zeros to expand your
No.
reach. You
If you
like
have a
you,
zero, you try to nominate the Virgin. Everyone knows
right,
that.
like yes, you protect them at all costs, including at the cost of your own life, maybe to get Undertaker check, maybe to proc a Virgin to prove that you're a townsfolk and your zero is more likely to be true, things like that. If you have a one, you probably try to suss out which neighbor seems more suspicious, get them killed. Maybe you sit out for a day, see if one of your neighbors dies. If they do, get the other one killed because your number is probably still a one. If you have a two, either go out guns blazing or you chill for a second and see if your number goes down the next night. And I think those are the things that an empath does. And the fortune teller, I think, just has more things to do than that. I like the level one of a fortune teller is get a yes, kill a yes, repeat, right? But I think there are choices a fortune teller can make that can heavily influence whether or not the good team wins the game. Like, I've been in games with fortune tellers who are just like, I got yeses these two nights, so let's just kill these people and win the game. And like, I feel in my bones that those players are good, and so I'm like ready to go and calling that fortune teller evil. But and they're not accounting for the fact that one of the most suspicious people in town died at night, and they need to go back and check people they got a no on. Because another thing I've seen is when a fortune teller rechecks people they got a no on and they get a yes, the good team almost always wins that game. But that's not like the level one of the fortune teller. The level one of the fortune teller is more like, well, I got a no on them, so I'm moving on. So I think that they have more options when they survive a bit later into the game to because if you check people, if some no's are alive later in the game with you and you recheck them and you still get a no, that is also really helpful for closing Starpath Scarlet Woman worlds, right? Where town is going to be building those worlds because that's just what Trouble Brewing is. It's like, well, did the demon squirm away from us, whether we executed them or they star passed? So being able to close off worlds like that through your own choices, I think, has more strategic depth than what an empath would tend to do.
Yeah, I think I presaged that I was probably going to concede this point, but I said maybe we put the empath and the mathematician in the wrong order from their cousins in the power of house information, recurring information of fortune teller and chambermaid. Maybe we did this.
Look, just because the fortune teller information is fragile, easily disrupted, confusing, that doesn't mean it's not strategic still, right?
I mean,
It's
I'm happy to concede this point broadly, but I don't think there's. I still would hold that I don't think there's that much strategy in fortune teller picking. The big strategy thing that you've pointed out, and I think it's fair enough, is going back and picking players that you've picked, like knowing when to go back and pick players you've picked before. But like broadly, you pick some people you get social reads on and see what happens, and then you kill the ones you think are evil.
All right,
Yeah, I
so
mean, go ahead.
here's my continued fortune teller problem though. I think like 70% of fortune teller games, no matter what choices you make, you're a knight who's pretending to have other information.
Ooh, spicy.
Though I do, we do have the knight in A tier, so perhaps this is not that persuasive. But like the fortune teller's abilities to be magnets for poisons beginning night two, or murder beginning night two, or thinking they're poisoned beginning night two means they're in, like, most of their games are they have a secure fortune teller no night one, they learn two players from Art the Demon, and then the rest of their information doesn't matter because either it doesn't exist, it's poisoned, or they think it's poisoned. And
I
you have
think
to solve
that's
out
a
the games from up.
defeatist. I think that's a defeatist approach to fortune teller, and that does fortune teller a disservice.
I think fortune teller should be highly interested in murdering investigator poisoner pigs.
For
They
sure.
sure should.
Yeah.
Though, this gets into the bizarre meta of investigators refusing to push other pigs, because they, which, don't get me started on that. This character exists so that there's someone who can get executed day one.
Well, I'm happy to concede that fortune teller should be at the same level as knight.
You know what? Works for me.
I'm willing to concede that fortune teller and empath should switch spots, because if my best defense of a fortune teller ranking is most of the time it's just a knight anyway, oops, I put knight higher.
I will go ahead and, well, I'm just going to go ahead and move Knight in front of Fortune Teller. Still think it's good.
That's funny. That does close out our A's, I believe. So we bridge the gap with A and B there, with an A and a B at the same time.
Shall we just do a big old mollywomp on the B tier?
Oh, what?
Like,
I don't know what that word means.
Like,
I don't know what that word means like, either.
I think it's a word milk made up.
Like a big old scrum. Like B tier is like a big old scrum, right? There's a lot of stuff in here that...
I don't know what that means either.
What is the next character you guys wanted to talk about?
Okay. So in B tier, I kind of just want to make a small point about the drunk and the amnesiac. And I'm kind of going to talk about them together because it's a similar point that I'm making for both, which is that there's maybe an argument that they actually belong in the NA tier along with Alchemist, because the drunk, in most games, when you are the drunk, you are not going to be sure that you are the drunk. You rarely get hard confirmation of that. There are ways that that can happen. You know, a librarian can see you, which can give you some inclination. An Undertaker can see you. Maybe both of them see you, and then you're pretty damn sure, right? But most of the time, you don't know that you're the drunk, and therefore your strategy is simply going to be the strategy of the townsfolk token that you picked, which of course could run the gamut. Similarly, for Amnesiac, your strategy for how you want to play that is probably going to depend very, very much upon what the storyteller has prompted you to do, or what information they have given you, or if they are a storyteller who maybe gives you certain hints about, like, if you have a passive ability, if you get one of those hints, or, you know, those kinds of things. I think these strategies change so drastically depending on, you know, again, the token that you think you are for the drunk, or what's happened to you as an amni, that there's probably an argument that they maybe could go in an NA tier. But I also think they exist in something of a superposition between the strategy that you take when you don't know that you're the drunk, or you don't yet know what your ability is, versus when you kind of have stronger information pointing you towards certain things. So I can accept them being in a tier because there's often that threshold point where they change over.
Yeah, I guess, like, I find that a little more persuasive for the drunk than the amnesiac. And I think, like, the small difference in my mind between them is the strategy of the actual amnesiac ability is absolutely as unrankable as the alchemist's. Even more so because, you know, like, your ability isn't, may or may not be anything like anything else in Clock Tower. It may be a Clock Tower ability. It may not be a Clock Tower ability. It's even more Schrodinger's cat.
You might have to make animal noises.
But, like, I've run that.
I know.
But, like, despite that, like, the strategy of the things you do to discover the unknown rule, which is essentially what the amnesiac is, they're playing... they're playing this mini game where they're trying to solve the unknown rule, and there's entire board games based around how you solve an unknown rule. There's strategy in the choices you make to do that. There's strategies and choices in, okay, this is the feedback I got from the storyteller, not to the question, but like in terms of the storyteller, whether the storyteller, what nights the storyteller wakes you, what, how many people they ask you to point at, what information you get in return from pointing, that if you can understand the strategic approach to asking questions about your ability based on those things, like, you'll increase your odds of solving your ability, which increases the odds of your ability being useful.
So I think what you're saying for Amnesiac is basically that, like, the underlying strategy for doing that doesn't change, just the specific types of questions that you ask do.
Yeah, like...
That's fair.
Like, you know, you should ask a different day one question if you woke up day one, night one, than if you didn't wake up night one, right? And you should ask a different question if you picked two players than if you picked one player. You should ask a different question if the storyteller responded to your pick at night with information than if they just nodded their head and put you back to sleep. Like, And knowing what sort of questions to ask based on these sequences is strategic, I think, in a way that the actual ability is, of course, Schrodinger's ability. It might be a super strategically in-depth ability. It might be each night pick a player, evil players are drunk.
Yeah, I think that's fair to separate Amni out for that reason.
I think we talked about, I don't know if it ever made it into the cut of the like actual tier list, but I do think Emma and I talked about drunk sort of being a little bit awkward to rank because, you know, it's the strategy you have around it is often more about whether it's on script or not, somewhat like the conversation we had about Vortox earlier. And I'm happy to move it into NA just because there's not a character-specific strategy for drunk. I think it's a pretty reasonable like call-out in the same way of Alchemist sort of not having a specific kind of function as a character.
Yeah. Drunk is also sort of Vortoxy, where its presence on the script changes how all townsfolk need to play, right?
I mean, its presence on the script is its ability, weirdly.
Yeah. Like, versus the specific drunk player is probably not playing differently.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable call out.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I picked up the general gist of what Melk was suggesting, but I do still need to focus on the Chambermaid specifically, which I believe is definitely paired with Dreamer as far as they should always be on the same tier together. And a hypothetical scenario to demonstrate this. If on day one, you're the Chambermaid, somebody tells you, I'm just going to tell you I'm the exorcist and I'm going to pick you tonight because if you're the demon, you can't do anything about that. Now, if we translate that claim to Chambermaidese, what that person has just told you is, hey, if I'm evil, I'm the Poe, I'm the DA, I'm the assassin who hasn't gone yet, I'm all these really scary things. So they've already claimed that they're a scary Chambermaid number to you. And you don't necessarily need to verify that, because it doesn't help that much for endgame world building if the Exorcist is still alive. They're still going to be a Poe, Pucca, DA candidate, no matter what. On the other hand, if somebody tells you on day one, yeah, I'm the fool, I'm just going to vibe this game, this is a super chill role, I'm just going to do my thing. If you confirm that player does not wake, you have confirmed that they are, if evil, like the Zambul, the godfather who didn't wake up to get a kill, or like the mastermind. So they are the not scary evil things. So I think getting, like, if you can manage to get a zero off of your picks on the second night, that is really powerful information that confirms what those players are claiming. That's much more powerful information than getting like a two that matches what those players are claiming. And this is like the Dreamer, where early on that day one confirmation that somebody, you know, had to nail their bluff exactly right can be super strong. And after that, you're probably trying to sort out if they're evil, what are they? The nice thing about Chambermaid is that the storyteller cannot tell you that, oh, you know, it'd be really helpful if I could frame the fool. So I'm going to say that you dream the fool is either the fool or, you know, the Nodashi or something like that. They can't do that to the Chambermaid. They have to tell you, hey, this person didn't wake. They did not get a kill last night. And a side point to Chambermaid is that if you find yourself alive for a long time as a Chambermaid, it might be a Zambul game, because it's kind of weird for a Chambermaid to last a long time, but it's not that weird in a Zambul game. And if you can catch somebody waking up on a day that somebody survived execution or something was double tapped, if you survive that night, you can catch someone waking up who you got a zero on before. Guess what? You just won the game because you found the soft pool. So that's why I think Chambermaid should be higher, and it should also always be at the same tier as Dreamer. So I just put it on A with Dreamer.
Yeah, we can trade Chambermaid and Mathematician when we're trading Fortuneteller and Empath. All this makes sense. Mm-hmm. This may, like, at least from my perspective, this may be my bias against powerful information, recurring information roles that wake up every night and pick two players.
I think
we may have found a pattern.
Go ahead, Navian.
I think that Chambermaid is like, you can if you're trying to find analogies on the other base scripts of like what the role fulfills, like you talked about Chambermaid being kind of like a fortune teller on your initial ranking of it. And like, that's kind of true, but it's also more like Dreamer, right? I think that the fortune teller is doing something kind of like what Chambermaid is doing, but Chambermaid is doing it a little bit more precisely because they can make those worlds of, well, you wake on these nights and, you know, or you people didn't wake on those nights, therefore you have to be this subset of evil characters if you're evil, which makes it more precise than a fortune teller in a way, but less precise than a dreamer because the dreamer gets the very specific characters. So, like, it's sort of doing something that floats in between those two.
I think something that this conversation is, like, revealing for me is that there are also, like, these groups of characters, and I've kind of known this for all, but I don't know if I've ever like put like specific words to it or specific thoughts to it on the podcast, at least maybe a little bit. You know, there's some specific groups of characters that maybe are wider than even I was thinking about, that may like bear an interesting conversation to talk about, like how they're different and how you sort of interact with them differently. And Dreamer, fortune teller, and Chambermaid are all pretty similar in like what they're doing in certain ways, but they do have some differences, and it is kind of interesting to think about, okay, well, if we've moved fortune teller up to A tier and Dreamer was always in A tier, you know, is Chambermaid similar enough to them? Is there similar enough like thought processes and strategy patterns, you know, that they all do belong definitely together, or is there a disparity there? And you know,
I think it's interesting to analyze that point, like, side by side with how you analyze those same kind of groupings of characters that fill similar niches but in different ways when you're talking about, like, how effective they are for script building. Because, like, sometimes those align where it's like, yeah, these are all fulfilling the same thing in slightly different ways, and sometimes they don't. Like, Chambermaid is much lower down the tier than something like a dreamer or a fortune teller is when it comes to like script building, right?
Yeah,
it's much harder to build for Chambermaid because if you need either everything to have, it's like you need essentially BMR where the number of variety of weak patterns is different enough, including among the demons, that you don't just kill everyone who wakes, right?
Yeah, but like I just think it's interesting that basically both this tier list and the tier list that we did on script notes that I did with Alejo, they're sort of asking the same question of like, what impact does this character have on everything around it? But it's answering it in some like pretty different ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit happy for Chambermaid to move into A tier only because that puts it in the same tier as Goon, and I think it lives in a very happy little ecosystem with Goon. So, all right, Molly, tear us up.
I think
it's my turn again. Actually,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'll keep on the BMR train for now and talk about Zambul. I'm not actually sure if Zambul needs to move necessarily. But I do think that maybe something that was a little bit missed in the talking about it was, like, because the Zambul gets fewer kills than any other demon, probably, well, I mean, aside from, like, the demons that literally don't kill at all, of the killing demons, it gets the least opportunities of any of them in the entire game. You actually have to be really strategic about the choices that you're making with your kills as a result. Yeah, and that includes, like, when should I potentially kill myself? When should I ask a storyteller to maybe consider gossip killing me? When should I have my godfather kill me? Those kinds of things, right? So you have to be a lot more strategic in your choices and who you're taking out when, because you're going to get much less opportunity than the others. And again, I don't know if that's enough to say that it should be fully bumped up. But I think that maybe that was a little bit missed, and maybe it deserves a slightly higher B tier level than where it's at.
I think that's incredibly fair. Yep. Like, if you just think about it, like, purely mathematically, like, which is a bit silly, like, but in, like, a 12-player game, an imp gets, what, 5 kills?
Usually.
Right?
Yeah.
Give or take a monk protection or so. Like, if the imp makes one of those 5 kills as a bad kill. It's not the end of the world for the imp. If they kill someone they should have been keeping alive as a frame candidate, it's generally not the end of the world for the imp. If the Zomboul loses one of their kills to either killing someone they should be framing or whiffing on a protection on a knight they needed to make sure someone died, like, that might be the only kill the Zomboul gets that game. So, like, making a bad kill as a Zomboul can easily be, like, an 100% fail rate of your killing effectively versus a 20% for an imp in the same player count. And I think, like, in that sense, yeah, like, the Zomboul has to be so much more thoughtful and careful about who they kill and when than any other demon, because they only have their precious few opportunities.
I don't know if that moves it a tier either, but I do think that it's a really important point to capture, so I appreciate that.
I'm looking at, like, fucking Fangu here in B tier. Zomboul is more strategic than Fangu.
Is it more strategic than Yagababble? Kinda.
Yeah.
I mean, is it? I'll get to Yagababble later.
No.
Spoiler.
Maybe it's Fangu and Typhon need to go down. I don't know. But, like, Zomboul can't possibly be stuck in the same tier as Fangu.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I think the social game of a Zomboul can also vary a lot, just because you're okay to die, you might pick a time to kill yourself to look good, and that's just something that other demons just don't have access to.
Okay, technically an imp or any demon that has a Scarlet Woman in play can choose the kill yourself option to look good, but it's not quite the same as Zomboul.
Zomboul sort of just has to find the time to do it, because you really don't, most of the time you do want to be dead and sort of look relatively good and sort of have people forget when you die. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. I don't know if it goes up a tier or down a tier. The middle bit, yeah, it's the middle bit's a mess. Emma and I think we kind of did talk about that as well, that the middle bit's probably, could probably be differentiated out of it.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we need to talk about Yagababble too.
Might as well.
You want to just dive in?
Yeah.
Nah, let's keep on the BMR. You take Tinker, and then we'll get back to Yagababble.
Okay, I'm just going to do a short bit on Tinker, is that we were more on Team Milk on this one than the Tinker we'd probably rate in C. I think the point about trying not to get gossip killed out of true gossip, that's like an interesting point, but ultimately a very narrow point. A great way to not get killed by a gossip is to get yourself executed on day one, which is not an interesting play pattern. I guess you could also try to look super suspicious and try to force the storyteller to frame you, but then you might get executed at the end of the game, which also wouldn't help you too much. So I think Tinker probably drops down for me personally.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know what I was on something or something. I don't know what I was going through my mind.
Look, I was going to say that.
I wanted to, like, part of why Tinker is B was there was some amount of trying to balance the character roles between the tiers. And, like, there's a lot of outsiders who don't have a lot going on in terms of what they can do differently. And Tinker has something sometimes it can do differently.
And in Tinker's favor, it's one of the, if not the funniest roles in the entire game. Yeah. So, like, it does have that going for it.
Like,
oh, it's S tier for how much I love it.
Like, Plague Doctors want to live forever. Plague Doctors and Saints want to live forever. Snitches literally don't care. Their token might as well be blank as far as how they play it.
Yeah.
Hatters want to be dead immediately. Golems want to smash. Tinker maybe has some things I can think about doing differently from game to game. Maybe. I don't know. Possibly. Once in a while.
I mean, the thing is, Tinker's not as boring, and I will use that word very cleanly, not as boring as Plague Doctor Sweetheart or Saint, that are just try not to die rolls. Like, it's more interesting than those. Does it belong in B tier? I don't really think so. I never really thought so, but, you know, Emma made a point.
We can put it in C, but I just want to, I want to defend it as maybe the Tinker has more interesting play patterns than the rest of the C tier outside.
We can put it in C.5.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it can be a high C. That's fine.
I'm not saying it does. I'm saying maybe it does. Because these other ones sure as hell don't.